Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, they're going to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then here I have a whole several pages here about Ramdas Prabhu that we'll read. So, we'll do the verse and verses, and then we'll read about Ramdas Prabhu. Okay. Text 1? Okay, text 1. Sri Badarayanir Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavat Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tan Rajan Pratyahur Naya Govidaha Sri Badaranayar Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavad Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tanrajan Pratyahur Naya Kovidaha Sri Badarayanir Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavad Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tanrajan Pratyahur Naya Kovidaha Shivarayanir Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavat Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tanrajan Pratyahur Naya Kovidaha. Bharanayanuvacha Evam Te Bhagavaduta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tanrajan Pratyahur Naya Kovidaha Bharanayanuvacha Evam Te Bhagavaduta. Upadaryata Ranrajan Sri Badarayanuvacha Evam Te Bhagavat Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tanrajan Pratyahur Nayako Vidaha Sri Badarayanir Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavad Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tandrajan Sri Badanaya Nirvacha Evam Te Bhagavat Duta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadaryata Tandrajan Pratyahur Nayako Vitaha Matajis Sri Bhagavaya Uvacha Evam Te Bhagavanta Yamaduta Bibhasitam Upadarayata tanrajan Pratyahur nayako vidaha Shri Badanaya nirvacha Evam te bhagavat duta Yamaduta bibhastitam Upadarayata tanrajan Pratyahur nayako vidaha Sri Badanaya nirvacha Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, said, Evam, thus, te, they, Bhagavad Duta, the servants of Lord Vishnu, Yamaduta, by the servants of Yamaraj, Avibhasitam, what was spoken, Upadarya, hearing, Ata, then, Tan, unto them, Rajan, O king, Pratyahu, replied properly, Nayako vidaha, being conversant in good arguments or good logic. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sukadeva Goswami said, My dear King, the servants of Lord Vishnu are always very expert in logic and arguments. After hearing the statements of the Yamadutas, they replied as follows. Please repeat. Sukadeva Goswami said, My dear King, the servants of Lord Vishnu are always very expert in logic and arguments. After hearing the statements of the Yamadutas, they replied as follows. So no purports, we'll go on text number 2. I'll just chant that. Sri Vishnu Duta Uchu Aho Kastam Dharma Drisam Adharma Sprisate Sabam Yatra Dandeshu Apapeshu Dando Yar Driyate Vritaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Vishnu Duta said, Alas, how painful it is that irreligion is being introduced into an assembly where religion should be maintained. Indeed, those in charge of maintaining the religious principles are needlessly punishing a sinless, unpunishable person. Purport. The Vishnudutas accused the Yamadutas of violating the religious principles by attempting to drag Ajamil to Yamaraj for punishment. Yamaraj is the officer appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to judge religious and irreligious principles and to punish people who are irreligious. However, if completely sinless people are punished, the entire assembly of Yamaraj is contaminated. This principle applies not only in the assembly of Yamaraj, but throughout human society also. In human society, properly maintaining religious principles is the duty of the king's court or the government. Unfortunately, in this yuga, Kali Yuga, the religious principles are tampered with, and the government cannot properly judge who is to be punished and who is not. It is said that in the Kali Yuga, if one cannot spend money in court, one cannot get justice. Indeed, in courts of justice, it is often found that magistrates are bribed for favorable judgments. Sometimes religious men who preach the Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of the entire populace are arrested and harassed by the police and courts. The Vishnudutas, who are Vaishnavas, lamented for these very regrettable facts. Because of their spiritual compassion for all the fallen souls, Vaishnavas go out to preach according to the standard method of all religious principles. But unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, Vaishnavas who have dedicated their lives to preaching the glories of the Lord are sometimes harassed and punished by courts on false charges of disturbing the peace. Om Agyanati Madandasha Gananjana Shalaka Chakshu Umritam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vena Maha. Vancha Kapa Trupyasya Kripasana Vivata Paritana Pavani Vaishna Vivana Mona Maha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuni Chananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gora Bhakta Vrindaki. Jai. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so we'll briefly speak about these particular verses and then we'll read about Ram Das Prabhu. So here in this particular chapter, I don't want to read the whole chapter summary, but just a little bit. It says, in this chapter, the messengers from Vaikuntha explained to the Yamadutas the glories of chanting the holy name of the Lord. The Vishnuduta said, now impious acts are being performed even in assembly of devotees. For a person who is not punishable is going to be punished in the assembly of Yamaraj. The mass of people are helpless and must depend upon the government for their safety and security. But if the government takes advantage of this to harm the citizens, where will they go? We see perfectly that Ajamil should not be punished, although you are attempting to take him to Yamaraj for punishment. So this is a very interesting opening statement in regards to Ajamil, because for the last couple of months, we've been reading what a hellish person Ajamil was. He was completely sinful, very hellish kind of individual, self-interested in sense gratification, and committing so many sinful acts just to satisfy his desire for enjoyment. But herein we see that this material world is actually for the Yamadutas, and the spiritual world is for the Vishnudutas. So because this is their realm, their domain, so the Yamadutas are actually, they're in charge here. They're the controllers. They are here because in this material world, more or less, all of us are susceptible to punishment. Only those that are following religious principles are freed from this punishment. So herein, we're going to read how Ajamil, even though a very sinful man, but by following a very important religious principle at the time of his death, he was able to overcome the Yamadutas. So human form, we'll be also hearing this, a human form is meant for following and executing religious principles, not the animals. Animals are, that's not their duty. It's human form of life. So you can't expect an animal, a dog, you know, if you bring a dog into the temple, you'll become very disturbed. You'll tell him, why is a dog here? Why are you letting him in here? Or if you let an animal on the altar, you know, what would happen? There'd be so many difficulties. Immediately, it would be on internet. We let a dog in a temple room. That would be sacrilegious. So we see that to follow the religious principles is an important factor of human life. And if we don't, there's no escape. There's no escaping it, really. There's no possible means that we can think of, except for taking up religious practice, can we overcome the punishment. So we see that in human society, the material world, Srila Prabhupada, he's used the example so many times about driving. If you're driving down the street in America, here you drive on the left side, from the right side and left side. So if you're driving this way, like if you're Venice Boulevard, if you're driving that way, it's east. So if you decide to go on the east side of Venice Boulevard, or the side that's going east, and you decide to go west, you'll create a problem. This will be a difficulty. You'll actually be a criminal, and you'll go to jail. So we see that in human society, we must know what to do. We have to know what the law of the Supreme Lord is. So we see that if we don't learn the laws of human society, of driving on the street, we have to suffer the consequences. So similarly, It's the purpose of the human being to understand and know the law of Krishna, of God. And we see that the aim of life is Nate Vidus Vishnu, Svartagatim Hi Vishnu, that's what it is. So if we don't understand that to serve Krishna is the aim of life, Vishnu, then what is the purpose of our life? Simply to engage in so many sinful activities, so many nonsense desires that we develop. And here we see that Ajamil, he was expert in all these things. We read previously that he was expert at thievery, at cheating, at gambling, and even murder. He was expert at murder. And it appears that he performed all these activities and he never got caught. He never got caught. But what's really interesting is that at the time of death, he was going to see the Yamadutas. So he actually did get caught. He may have not gotten caught in the material world, so to speak, but at the end of his life, there he was going to see the Yamadutas who were going to drag him away. So the purpose of life is to understand real dharma. Savaya pum shamparo dharmo yato bhakti arhokshajay ahaituki apratihata yayapmat supadisirati. It's described in the Bhagavatam that the supreme occupation, so everyone has an occupation. We all have a particular desire to do something. But it's described that the supreme occupation is that by which all men develop a desire or an opportunity to serve the transcendental Lord. But in order for this to become satisfactory, in order for us to be satisfied by this occupation, it has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. This is the only way we get real satisfaction. So if we perform Krishna conscious service and we have some motivation and or we interrupt it, then we'll see we'll not be fully satisfied. The satisfaction won't be there. Although this is our supreme occupation. So in order to understand how to execute this principle of Krishna consciousness, it's important for us to follow the instruction of the acharyas. We have to follow the acharyas. If we don't follow the acharyas, then we won't understand how to execute. We won't know what to do. Basically speaking, every living entity is ignorant. And it's no one's fault that we're ignorant. Basically, we're all born in a mode of ignorance. Each and every one of us are ignorant. But should we stay in ignorance? This is the real question. Should we stay in this mode of ignorance? Or should we develop a desire to understand the purpose of life? So we see that an ignorant person is very dangerous. Just like if an ignorant person thinks he knows everything, they're an extremely dangerous person. Sometimes you may have someone do a task and ask them, please do this, and they'll say, oh, I can do it. They may even volunteer, I'll do this for you, no problem, let me do it. But if they're ignorant, they'll create havoc. And we see that ignorance is throughout the whole world. Everybody thinks they're this body. And some people are so ignorant that they don't even understand that point, but still they want to take up some position of leadership. Or they want to actually try to change the world. But we can see that this ignorance creates havoc. And although we may read something about a person like Ajamil, today, practically speaking, everyone's like an Ajamil. And this is normal activity. It's normal. You're not necessarily normal. But we see that it's rampant throughout society, that people are interested in intoxication, gambling, illicit sex. These things are not, they're not astounding. They're not astonishing. They're actual just activities that are going on in society. And everybody kind of just accepts it because everyone's in ignorance and they don't understand what the real purpose is. So in the Shastras, it's described that one must approach a spiritual master. Tadigyanartam sagurum eva vigachet. Srotam brahmanishtam. So it's described that we have to approach a person, one who's a self-realized soul, Brahmanishtam, one who knows, Shrotriyam, one who's expert and one who knows the science of the self. And in the Shastras it's described that there's no question of maybe, Abhigacchet. It's not, oh, I may or may not. There's no question of that. It says that one must. It's just, Prabhupada illustrates that very nicely, very sternly. One must approach a self-realized soul. And by approaching the self-realized soul, we learn what the real purpose of life is, what the aim of life is. Because really, if we just want to remain ignorant, or we want to remain a fool or a rascal, that's our choice. But if we remain in that particular platform, then the Yamadutas will definitely take us away. So approaching the Acharya, like Srila Prabhupada, the Acharya of ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he's given us the formula of how to get out of this material world. So all we need to do is simply follow that formula. If we follow that formula, then we can become understanding of Bhagavad Dharma. So many people speak of Dharma. But Bhagavad Dharma is the ultimate Dharma. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityajamam Ikam Saranam Vraja. This is Bhagavan speaking. Krishna, the Supreme Lord. He's saying, abandon all this useless Dharma and just surrender unto me. And this is Krishna speaking. But it's very difficult to understand this unless we have the association of a pure devotee of the Lord. So Dharma means Bhagavad Dharma. Otherwise, it's simply cheating. It's a cheating process. So if we really want to know what our supreme occupation is, that supreme occupation will be given to us by a pure devotee, by the Acharya. He'll give us the means and the tools and the direction of how to get out of this material world, how to actually become freed from all the dualities of this material existence, hankering and lamentation. Because this is what we do. We hanker and lament constantly on a daily basis. If you just try to take stock of how many times in a particular day one laments and hankers, you know, I hanker for this, and then I lament that I can't get that. Just by the process of hankering and lamentation, there's so much suffering caused from that activity in itself. But we don't even realize it. If we would just have a little notebook and just, you know, write down, you know, while you're chanting your japa, how many times do you hanker for this, and then how many times do you lament for that? And if you just took a note of that, and just every time you hankered for something, you put a slash. And then every time you, lamented for something, another slash. Can you imagine how many slashes you'd have within an hour? 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe a full day? No wonder we're in a miserable condition of life. No wonder we're suffering so much. Because this hanker and lamentation creates so much problem and so much difficulty. But we see that just by a little bit of service in Krishna consciousness, it can stop a great portion of this hankering and lamentation. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. We see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, just by a little bit of activity on the path of Krishna consciousness, just a little bit, not a lot, it just takes a fraction. And Ajamil is a perfect example of just a fraction. I mean, his whole life was sinful. But at the time of death, he called out the name of Narayana. Prabhupada describes that Ajamil, when he was crying out for his son, he was actually crying out, Narayana, please save me. Narayana, please save me. And he was yelling out like this. And although he wasn't even referring to the Supreme Lord, Narayana, but because he was in such distress and complete anxiety and hoping that his son could save him, Krishna heard. It's Narayana heard it. And he came. He sent his Vishnu Dutas to save Ajamya. But we see that this cannot be just some kind of false activity. Like Papa describes, we as devotees, we should practice this chanting of the holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we practice nicely, then at the time of death, we may be able to remember the holy name of the Lord. We may be. There's a possibility we won't. Because you see, when we're dying, you may be in a coma. You may be in some extreme pain, unconscious. And we won't be able to chant. Our lips won't be able to move. But if we practice, maybe by Krishna's mercy, at the time of death, we may be able to chant the holy name. But we should practice this activity with sincerity and with love. Prabhupada gives the example of like a parrot. Like you can teach a parrot to chant the holy name. You can probably take a parrot and you could chant the Maha Mantra. And you could probably chant it very nicely. But when he sees the cat of death coming, what will he do? He'll go, ka, ka, ka. He won't chant the Maha Mantra. So, in our execution of Krishna consciousness, we ourselves have to be very careful in the execution, the practice. We should practice with real sincerity and sincere desire to serve the Supreme Lord. This is imperative. This is why it's so important to have the instruction of the spiritual master, the Acharya. It's imperative. Because the spiritual master will even teach us how to chant properly, the significance of chanting the Maha Mantra. Every morning I chant with Prabhupada on that chanting CD. And every morning you hear, chant properly. Or it says, speak properly or something like that. Huh? Yeah, he says that, but he also says, speak properly too, I think. Doesn't he? At least that's what I think he's saying. So every time I hear that, it just reminds me, oh no, wait a minute. I better chant properly. Because the proper chanting of the holy name is imperative, especially at the time of death. One may have all kinds of bhajan and sadhana, and he may be very sincere, or she may be very sincere. But ultimately, this will be shown at the time of death. This is when it will actually become manifest. You know, we may try to look externally very Krishna conscious. But realistically, at the time of death is when we'll find out what our bhajan and what our sadhana is actually really about. Right now, we can do so many things. So, it's very important for us to execute with sincere practice. And this is the purpose of Krishna conscious movement. If we practice properly, then when we go out to preach about Krishna consciousness, people will take it seriously. And here Prabhupada puts in the purport that sometimes religious men who preach the Krishna conscious movement for the benefit of the entire population are arrested and harassed by police and courts because there's ignorance. They don't know what the real purpose of life is. They don't understand Dharma. They have no conception. But as devotees, if we practice properly, then the desire to go out and teach and introduce to the common man the science of Krishna consciousness will become a very important aspect of our existence in Krishna consciousness. It'll come naturally. It's a natural ingredient in the advancement of Krishna consciousness that we want to give someone else this opportunity. And the Acharya, like Srila Prabhupada, he gave a perfect vehicle for us to do this. And of course, this is by the distribution of these wonderful literatures that Srila Prabhupada so nicely gave us. That'll be a natural tendency to want to give someone. I mean, we may want to speak to somebody. We may want to tell them about Krishna. That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. But we should know that when we came to Krishna consciousness is because we got a piece of literature and we read it. And from reading it, we became inspired to become a devotee. That it wasn't just because someone spoke to it. It was good. The introduction was great. But in order for us to really step forward and to really progress and to really want to become a devotee, it took us to read these wonderful literatures like Bhagavatam. And as devotees, in order to keep us motivated to want to give someone this science, we ourselves have to read. We must read these books. We must read them daily. If we don't read these books daily, then how is it that we're going to develop the desire to give someone the science of Krishna consciousness? Very difficult. Very difficult. Barely we'll be able to keep our own Krishna consciousness at a certain level. That's necessary in order for us to remember Krishna at the time of death. And Ajamil's grace was the fact that he named his son Narayan, who he was very attached to. He was so attached to him. He was by this time an old man. So you consider yourself to be like, let's say, the age of like Vidura Das. You know, Vidura, he's older than Ajamil. But just think of the age of that. And having a small child around you all the time. And this is what Ajamil saw. And he became completely immersed in Narayana. And he loved him beyond belief. And that in itself gave him the opportunity to chant the holy name. So, in Krishna consciousness, we're a personal movement. And in Krishna consciousness, we have to develop love. It's imperative. And love is exhibited by executing the mission of the spiritual master. There's a very nice story about that from Hari Sariprabhu in his book about how so many devotees were coming to Srila Prabhupada when he was his servant. And they were saying they were doing so many big, big things for Prabhupada. He became very discouraged, he said, because he felt he was doing nothing. And then he walked to Prabhupada and told him, "Prabhupada, I don't know if I love you. I see all these, my God brothers, they're doing so many big things. I'm not hardly doing anything. I don't even understand if I really love you." And Prabhupada didn't say anything. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, by the way. I'm not speaking exactly. And Prabhupada said nothing to him. And then sometime later, unexpectedly, Prabhupada asked him when he was massaging him on the roof, "Do you like massaging your spiritual master?" And Hari Sari answered, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And then out of the blue, Prabhupada said, "Yes, see, you do love your spiritual master." So what was this love? The execution of his service. That was the love. That he was just doing his service for Srila Prabhupada, executing it by doing it, by massaging Srila Prabhupada's body like that. So this is imperative for us. We need to take the mission of the pure devotee, the acharya, and we need to execute it. And by that execution, we can exhibit our love and develop love for Srila Prabhupada and this ISKCON society. This is the way we do it. Just like if you have a relationship in the material world, you exhibit your love by executing an exchange of activity. This is real love. And we see that Prabhupada uses the example of the mother and the child. And by that example, we see the mother is doing service for the child, unmotivated and uninterrupted practically, whenever, all time of the night or day. If the child wants something, the mother's there with loving care, giving that child all the necessities. This is, Prabhupada said, this is the highest love in the material world. So if we love Srila Prabhupada, if we love ISKCON, we'll do our best to execute the mission and the desire of the acharya. And we know what that desire is, to disseminate Krishna consciousness, to give people Krishna consciousness. This is Prabhupada's desire. And all the things that we do here is for that purpose. everything here, the Mangal Arati, the Guru Puja, the Kirtan, the chanting, the deity worship, cooking for the deities, prasadam, it's all for the purpose of giving people Krishna consciousness. That's everything is there. It all culminates for that reason. There's no other reason but that. And if we really execute it nicely and properly, we'll want to be part of that activity. We'll want to be part of that mission to give people Krishna consciousness. So, this is the science. Krishna Varnam Tisa Krishnam Sango Pangasa Prasadam Yagnai Sankirtan Paranaya Janti Hi Sumeda Saha. It's described that in this age of Kali Yuga, anyone who's got a, you know, Sumedasa, a little bit of intelligence, will worship the Supreme Lord along with his associates in the performance of the Sankirtan Yajna. This is what Kali Yuga is about. If somebody has a little bit of Sumedasa, a little bit of intelligence, they'll take up this mission of Krishna consciousness and spread it. And also Bhagavatam says, Kalor Doshanihi Rajan, Astihi Eyeko, what's that? Kirtanat Eva Krishna said, Mukta Sangha Param Rajat. That in this age of Kali Yuga, it's so fallen, but in this age there is still one thing that's available, one important item, and that's the Maha Mantra. And if we chant this Maha Mantra, we'll become delivered from this mirror of stress and anxiety of the material world. So this is Krishna consciousness. Okay, so we're going to read some stuff here about Ramdas. It shouldn't take me too long, a few minutes, just a couple of things. All right. You can just be a little bit patient. Is that okay? I mean, you know, we'll probably be a little bit late. Maybe we'll be there just in time for prasadam at 8:30. So, please bear with me, just for a few minutes. So, remembering Ramdas. This is just a synopsis of Ramdas's activities here in New Dwarka and how he came to Krishna consciousness. Every year we like to do this in order to remember a nice soul who did a lot of nice service here in New Dwarka for Shishi Rukmini Dwarkadish. After the third day of a devotee's departure from the world, there is a Samrit Sambra ceremony. That is when we remember our association with a god brother who has just departed. In the case of Ramdas Prabhu, many devotees spoke at this ceremony held in Vrindavan in 2000. The information in this paper is a summary of this speaking. It is significant that Ramdas Prabhu left this world during the auspicious days when the moon is waxing between Ekadasi and Purnima in the very auspicious month of December. Prabhupada said that Vrindavan is a place for taking birth and a place for dying. To show us by his example, Srila Prabhupada left this world from Vrindavan. When Ramdas came to know that his time was up, when the doctors told him he did not have much longer, he set his heart on leaving this world from Vrindavan Dham. There is a saying that there are three types of Vrijabhasis: one who is born in Vrindavan, one who lives in Vrindavan, and one who dies in Vrindavan. The one who dies in Vrindavan is the real Vrijabhasi. To understand how Ramdas could have the kind of conviction to be able to do this, we have to take a look at his life in Krishna consciousness. Ramdas was a very steady, determined servant of Shishi Rukmini Dwarkadish, Gornitai, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. Additionally, he was a devoted servant of the servants of the deities. He was always available, always on call for whatever service needed to be performed. He was not much disturbed if a devotee said they would perform an artik and then didn't show up. He would just cover for them. He was very fixed on keeping the exact high standard of service that Srila Prabhupada instituted. He was very devoted to Srila Prabhupada. Ramdas was born in Philadelphia and spent 20 years of his life there. He spent his next 20 years in New York City. One day he hitchhiked across the country with only a few dollars in his pocket with an idea of settling at the Rosicrucian farm in California. In 1980, he arrived in California, spent the night in a homeless shelter in downtown Los Angeles. The next day, devotees came to chant in that area. He was attracted to the devotees. They gave him a dinner card and a Bhaktivedanta magazine, which he read in the shelter. The next day, with no bus fare, he set out for the temple on foot. He walked the 10 miles, which took him 4 hours to get to the temple. A devotee named Nitai greeted him and gave him some Mahaprasad. He was invited into an office where he spoke to the temple vice president. He asked him, "Do you like what you see here?" Ramdas said, "Yes, it is wonderful here." The VP invited Ramdas to stay for 3 days. Ram broke down and cried. Ramdas had a personality that was very much like a communications or public relations person, although he had never held a job as such. Soon he was put in work with Amala Bhakta Das, given the responsibility to open up Sankirtan spots and arrange for permits for Rath Yatra and Dharmastami. At the time, he would dress Gornitai once a week in their night outfit. Then one day, Vatsala Prabhu, the temple president at that time, told him, "We think you'd make a great pujari. I will talk to you about it sometime." And a few minutes later, he returned and said to Ramdas, "You are going to be the head pujari." In the words of Krishna Kumari, who was married to Ramdas some years later, the head pujari had just left and the situation was beyond control. There were 100 women to deal with, including Mother Karta, and they were Prabhupada disciples. And some of them could be very overbearing ladies. There were 100 of them, and they couldn't find anyone to manage them. The problem was not the service or the cooking and offerings. The problem was with the 100 ladies. So they thought, here is a man who is mild-mannered and a bit older than everyone else. So Ramdas was asked to fill the position. He took the attitude that the women were already trained and dedicated and more qualified than himself, so he asked them to tell him what to do. There was an initial meeting between Ramdas and several of the most qualified dressers and seamstresses, and together they agreed upon standards for the way the deity should be dressed. Ramdas became particular about that. Every day he would look over all the dressing that had been done just before the doors were to be opened at 7 a.m. to inspect to see if anything was out of place, missing, or not in keeping with the standard way the deity should appear. Though particular about standards, Ramdas dealt with all the pujaris in a very loving and personal way. He would tell us repeatedly, "Just remember, Krishna loves you." End of quote. Devotees always had good feelings about him. There were always people in and out of his apartment who wanted to see him either for herbs. He studied medicinal herbs and prescribed different uses for them, or for help with their personal problems. He seemed somehow magically connected to herbal formulas. But perhaps more important than the herbs he prescribed was his kindness. He was always ready to hear them out and spend his time to preach to them. He was very approachable. He loved to read Prabhupada's books, and he could recite verbatim some of the long sets of prayers found in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the temple altar, when he said the standard puja mantras, he would recite them in Sanskrit and then over again in English. He used to say that he couldn't see any point in praying if he didn't know the meaning of what he was saying. His recitation was rhythmic and poetic. Mother Karta said, quote, "One of the visions I always have of him is at the site of the Rath Yatra. He would carry the deities up to the stage during Rath Yatra himself. He wouldn't let anyone else carry the deities. He would also get permits for the festival. The limousine people he got to transport the deities would be amazed by Ramdas's enthusiasm, and they would ask him, 'Who is this person whom we are getting to transport?' And then Ramdas would explain to them, quote, 'Well, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.'" End of quote. He would explain as much as they wanted to hear. Every year, Ramdas would spend 1 month in India shopping for the deities. He would buy only the most first-class things he could find, the best in dresses, scented oil, incense. He was a nature fanatic, and he had to have everything natural for their lordships, which was more expensive, but he didn't care. Whatever it took, he would always have to get the best for the deities. He often purchased special small farm-grown vegetables and natural sugar. Ramdas had very big hands. He was a tall, large man. He carried a set of many keys, which was so big and heavy that you could not help but wonder how anyone could remember which key went where. He often had a cloth bag with him, and it was full of sweets. He took it shopping, and he laid a sweet on anyone he did business with, or gave them a card and invited them to the temple. He was big, and he did everything in a big way. He made big pieces of burfi, para, and sandesh for Rukmini Dwarkadish, and he often passed them out to devotees. He used to give the brahmacharis a strong hug, as if he would not let them go, and then he would finally let them go if they would chant Hare Krishna. He had a great deal of affection and attachment for protecting the deities as well as the devotees. He went on as head pujari like that for 15 years. He seemed to actually understand that serving the Vaishnavas is the key to spiritual life. He once said, quote, "Every single person that comes to tell me, that comes to me, I will give them my full attention and speak to them. At that moment, they are the most important person then and there." End of quote. When the 1994 earthquake took place, he personally arranged for the deity's worship, which went on temporarily in a bus, while the temple was cleaned and restored. Ram was often on a marathon to meet with devotees, to do deity shopping, as well as cover services that needed to be covered. It was well known around the temple that if Ram Dass came home and drove into his parking place and dozed off, you should just leave him alone there so he could finally get some shut-eye. Ram Dass had a serious heart attack in 1995. He was diagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy. In the hospital, the doctor said his heart was enlarged, 3 times bigger than normal. According to Mother Karta, quote, "When we were told he had a heart attack, we all thought, oh, no, 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 not Ram Dass, not now." End of quote. And when the doctor said his heart was 3 times enlarged, we thought, so what's new? We already knew this, his heart being enlarged, and I had nothing to do with the heart attack. That is just the way he is. In the hospital, he was in a little bed, and he didn't fit in the bed because he was a large person. He said, quote, "In this situation, I am just trying to accept whatever Krishna has given me. If he decided to take me, it is wonderful. Whatever needs to be done, I will do." End of quote. Virabhu Prabhu came to the hospital and read out loud to Ram Dass from Chaitanya Charitamrita. The doctor heard the reading when he came to check on Ram, and he asked a question. Ram Dass sat up and started preaching to the doctor. This was typical of Ram Dass, yet at this time, he was in intensive care, and no one could believe that he had the strength or awareness to sit up and preach so much. The doctor was even more surprised because he had just diagnosed Ram Dass as having only a few more hours to live. Ram Dass gradually recovered enough to come home from the hospital, but the doctor said his heart condition would become worse any time. He rested for 1.5 years, and then he and his wife, Krishna Kumari, gathered up a few belongings and flew off to India to stay in Vrindavan. When he was there, he used to say, quote, "Krishna has given me some borrowed time." End of quote. Ram Dass spent his last 3 years in Vrindavan. During that time, he mostly read and chanted and listened to lectures. He did some deity worship in his ashram. He did not engage in idle gossip. If you talked to him about anything at all, he would always relate whatever you said to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. He became very attached to Srila Prabhupada, and he had many copies of a drawing of Prabhupada's lotus feet laminated or framed to distribute to the devotees and worship. In his room in Vrindavan, he also kept many beautiful pictures of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, whom he had lovingly served without hesitation for so many years. Krishna Kumari did a wonderful, very devoted service by taking care of Ram Dass during those last days. He took care of his body, making sure he always had clean cloth and the special diet and medicine he required. Ram Dass was not at all agreeable to taking the Western medicine that was prescribed for him. The doctor said he should not unnecessarily use his energy getting out of bed in order to circumambulate a Govardhan Shila and to read, but Ram Dass said, "Save energy for what? I can't do anything else." End of quote. Krishna Kumari explains, quote, "I remember at one point I started to panic and he could see that, so he decided, as he usually did, to tell me to leave the room. He wanted to be alone. He was very alert and conscious. I left, but I came back in, and I said, Ram, Prabhupada is here, and everything is all right. He had the laminated picture of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet upon his heart. He said, Krishna, Krishna. And he turned to a picture of Srila Prabhupada. His soul left as we were both chanting. Kavichandra Maharaj was with Ram Das on a day that he left. They were laughing and joking together. Ram Das was very weak but happy. Maharaj gave him his usual treatment, a massage. Of Ram Das, Maharaj said, one cannot find fault with him. He was never scrambling for some position or any of those things. He was always blissfully serving Krishna. If we selflessly serve Krishna, that's the result. He will reciprocate and give us everything. Ram Das reminds us that we can dig down deep to think of all the good qualities of someone. This isn't very hard in his case. He always wanted to see the solutions and not dwell on the problems. Sometimes our problems are quite complex. Ram Das exhibited the solutions by surrendering to Krishna, and Krishna kindly took care of him and arranged everything. I thank Ram Das for his example, and I thank Krishna Kumari for taking care of him. The day he was brought to the hospital in L.A., they were doubtful that he would make it through the day. They said he would not live without a heart transplant, but they didn't know his heart, they only knew muscle. He was determined, but that was simply for Krishna's pleasure and not for any other reason. End of quote. When Ram Das's body was brought outside to be carried to the cremation, there was a white cow standing on the right side of the gate, and that is considered an auspicious omen. When Radharani goes out of her house every day to go and play with Krishna, if she sees a white cow on the right, then she knows she will see Krishna that day. Ram Das's body was so heavy that the men who carried the palanquin struggled under the weight of it. At the burning ghat, there was another struggle to supply enough wood to the fire. There was such a loud kirtan, a large procession of devotees following as they carried Ram's body to the Yamuna, that person standing in the bazaar asked, is that the guru? And the voice replied, yes. Ram Das Prabhu ki jai. Okay. Thank you very much for your patience. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.